Our reading this morning is from Luke chapter 2, verse 22. When the time came for the purification rites required by the law of Moses, Joseph and Mary took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. As it is written in the law of the Lord, every firstborn male is to be consecrated to the Lord, and to offer a sacrifice in keeping with what is said in the law of the Lord, a pair of doves or two young pigeons. Now there was a man in Jerusalem called Simeon who was righteous and devout. He was waiting for the consolation of Israel, and the Holy Spirit was on him. It had been revealed to him by the Holy Spirit that he would not die before he had seen the Lord's Messiah. Moved by the Spirit, he went into the temple courts. When the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him what the custom of law required, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, "Sovereign Lord, as you have promised, you may now dismiss your servant in peace. For my eyes have seen your salvation, which you have prepared in the sight of all nations, a light for revelation to the Gentiles and the glory of your people, Israel." May God bless the reading of his holy word. Well, on Friday morning, before God was even awake, I'm not even sure my clock registers time at that time of day, which means it's really early if my clock is not registering time. I stood out in my front yard, and I waved goodbye to the Conestoga wagon and the car following it. They were gone for all of about 2 minutes before they realized something vital they had left behind, and they were back. And so we waved again, and they drove away. And to my credit, it was not the worst day ever. The worst day was the day before, as we were loading. But as I came into the house, Richie, who had said his goodbyes, was standing there in the entryway of my home with his arms outstretched. And he just enveloped me in a great big, huge, crushing hug. His word for, he's always there to squeeze my broken parts back together. And I told him through my tears that I wanted him to grow up, get married, have 10 children, but never leave my zip code. I did not expect him to live with me forever, but I wanted him to move on, but he was not allowed to leave my zip code. And he just squeezed harder. The human touch is so important. I would like you to reach out to your neighbor, the person you're sitting next to. I'll come over and do Christina. And just touch their hand. Give them a hug. Shake their hand. Tell them you're happy to have them.
I'm happy to have you here. That, I'm happy you're here. You're wonderful. You're doing a great job.
That human touch is so vital to us. Don't hit your brother, Chase. You've been gone for 4 months. Don't hit your brother. You just thought I wouldn't pick on you if you showed up. I've had to pick on unwilling people for 4 months. I'm so glad you're back so I can pick on you at least for today. That touch is so important. People die for the want of human touch in their lives. This is not made up research. People are dying for want of human touch. With a positive touch, it has been shown to decrease violence, increase trust, and build greater immunity. I don't know how Kristen can hug those boys anymore, but human touch builds immunity. Touch is vital for babies to thrive. If you do not hold your baby will not thrive. Kaylin is the most thriving baby I've ever seen. We are faced with the struggle in an ever-increasing technological world to incorporate touch into our lives. We spend more time touching our technology than we do touching other people. Touch indicates to us pain and joy, hot and cold, I've been feeling more cold receptors this week than hot receptors, which is okay, because in August I can't stand the hot receptors, so I'm okay with the cold receptors. But we've had a lot of cold. Soft and hard. Bumpy and smooth. Trust me, Rachel is at one with the bumpy in her life. We're on this little Marco Polo app where we talk back and forth with little video snippets. And if you just watch the feed across the bottom of my phone, where every time she has talked to me, this is what it looks like. As she drives that truck across country. Bumpy and smooth. Sticky and sharp. Sometimes things should not be sticky when you touch them and you go, ew. Your backsides right now are communicating to you the hardness of the chairs. Except for Mark, who's got the soft, cushy one. There are husbands with their arms possessively wrapped. I think there is. Yes, there's a husband with his arm possessively wrapped around his wife. I wrote that down, hoping at least one husband loved his wife this morning. Usually I can count on Conrad, but he's not. Oh, he is hugging Marilyn this morning. Okay. You think I don't pay attention to y'all. I know what's going on. I don't think we have any sleeping children, but often we have a sleeping baby in the arms of mama. The kids that ran out of here, clamoring for Richie to touch them, to sweep them up in those big arms of his and have fun. They don't know they're being taught important things. They're learning a Bible verse today through throwing frisbees at 1 liter bottles of Coke. You know, to them, that's fun. But we know that they're learning something while they throw those frisbees, open frisbees at the Coke bottles. There is, of course, touch in our Christmas story. Lots of touch. I read 42 generations this morning. And I want you to think about the touch involved in 42 generations. 42. The purpose of that genealogy in Matthew is to present to a Jewish audience the fact that Jesus was a bona fide Jew, that he had the right papers, the right lineage, the right family members. But it's also establishing that he comes from a family, just like you and I, a family. Because family is everything in the Jewish nation at this time and even to today. I mean, my kids think that I'm, you know, a little protective and overbearing and very much, you know, have them all around, but I am nothing like a Jewish mama, nothing. I don't have that guilt trip down quite well enough. I'm working on it. I'm working on it really hard. But think of 42 generations of moms and dads and family squabbles and tickle fests before bedtime and hugs and kissing of the boo-boo when you hit your finger with the hammer. And being held when you need to go to sleep. Think about when dad teaches son something. I saw it in my own family. You're going to teach your son how to hammer a nail. Dad's big, careworn hand comes over the little son's small hand, and he picks it up and he hammers with the son to guide the hammer. That's touch. Mom with her hands over the little girl's hands, teaching her how to knead the bread. Flatten the tortillas. Little kids can't get them flat enough, but mama sure can. Touch. 42 generations of touch. There's also 42 generations of childbirth. Do I need to say more about that level of touch? There's a lot of touch going on there. There's a lot of sensation coming through the organ of skin. There's a lot of touch. Jesus came into the world through normal channels. with lots of touch involved. His mother gave birth to him. His mother held him. His mother nursed him. His father taught him to build things, to work with wood, to be a carpenter. The Bible even goes so far as to say he was wrapped in swaddling clothes, which science today has proven is how babies do best. That feeling of being swaddled, touch, the encompassing touch. Being held next to a warm body and snuggling with mama. And then on the eighth day, they take baby Jesus, because the law requires, take him to the temple to offer the sacrifice of the doves or the two pigeons. If you've seen the wires across the streets in Houston today, there's lots of birds out there you could take for your sacrifice. It's just a matter of catching them. Lots of birds. But they take their two birds to the temple for the sacrifice, and a man who has been promised that he will not die until he sees the Messiah sees them and comes running over, kind of like what we all did with Chase and Angela and Mike this morning. We just went running over. Let's not forget Zach and Keith. We ran over there too. In fact, I think Zach beat them all in the door. But Simeon runs over and takes the baby, and he says, I can die now. I've seen the baby. I've seen the Messiah. But what does he do? He takes the baby from the mom and dad. Now, I'm a pretty overprotective mom and dad, and when strangers start grabbing at my kids, I get a little worried. But we have no record that Mary and Joseph were anything but a little amazed. But I can see Joseph being a little shocked. I mean, come on. Mary's pregnant. He knows it isn't his. I mean, he's quite clear it is not his. And he's trusting that God has told him correctly that it's okay to marry Mary. And he's gone through this trip to Bethlehem. The shepherds have shown up out of nowhere saying there were a bunch of angels on the hillside. And now he's brought his infant son to the temple, and a stranger has run up and grabbed the baby from Mary's arms and said, I've seen the Savior. Joseph's a little freaked out, I'm sure. Either that, or he makes Rick look like a very excitable person. Just very calm, you know? And we just file this away. But there's all this touching going on. It'll be 30 years before Jesus starts reaching out and touching others, blessing them, providing miracles through the gift of touch. In almost all of his miracles, not every single one, but in almost all of his miracles, either he touches them or he directs someone else to touch them. Touch is almost always involved. We're barreling down on Christmas 2017. When we meet next Sunday, it'll all be over but stuffing the wrapping paper in the trash bags. It'll be Christmas Eve. You guys will be in church, looking at your watch, going, can we get on to the family get-together? I got to get to three of them this afternoon. We've explored the sound of fear and trust. We've tasted something different. And we've smelled the stink we cover. Today, let's envision the touch that changes lives. The touch that changes lives. Did you know in the 15th century, surgeons were barbers? Surgeons were barbers. Corey, this would be a good time to put up my picture. Surgeons were barbers. The person who cuts your hair is also your surgeon. I don't know about anybody else, but that's not who I want to be cutting on me. Friend of Jerry had surgery this week, and she spent 10 hours having some sort of replumbing done and ended up with a colostomy bag or whatever. 10 hours of having her insides rearranged and sewn and re-sewn and yanked on. The doctor said he physically had to yank on them. Yuck, 10 hours of that. And then he acted surprised when she woke up in pain. But I don't want my hairdresser anywhere near my insides. I don't know about you, but I, you know, she's really good at my hair. But I don't really trust her to reroute my large intestine and colon. But in the 15th century, surgeons were barbers. That alone is one of the reasons why I want my doctor to go to school for 15 years before they touch me. Doctor came in to operate on my dad this week. Great. He explained the procedure, and he looked at us, and he said, "Do y'all have any questions?" And I said, "I have a really impertinent one." And he said, "Go for it." And I said, "Are you even old enough to be a doctor?" He looked to be about your age. He really did. He was the youngest looking doctor I've ever seen. Came to find out he was 41 years old, but he looked your age, and I'm like, I've got Doogie Howser cutting on my dad's head. It was pretty scary. So I want my surgeons to know something. Our Rembrandt of the day, we're looking at some Rembrandt paintings this year, and in this art series, The Allegory of the Senses, this is the stone operation. What's going to happen here is that the barber, who's the one in the back wearing the red hat, is about to slice open the patient's head, the old man. The other person is holding the light. Thank goodness there is a light. I would hate to think they were doing this in the dark. But the surgeon is going to cut open the head literally, physically. This is a real operation of the 15th century to remove the rocks in the head. And hopefully the person will not be as stupid, silly, or otherwise weird. In which case, Richie would have had about 100 of these surgeries by now, and I've probably capped out at about 5,000. You know, I win the dits of the day more than anybody I know. But this is a real surgery that goes on in the 15th century. Oh, please don't play with the cords. Please don't play with the cords. I don't want to have surgery on her head today. Mary gets that today. Banging on the head. To me, opening the head to remove stones of foolishness sounds a lot like selling oceanfront property in Arizona. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make any sense to me. But we have 500, 600 years more experience with the human body than they did, and they thought that you could literally remove the stones of foolishness. How many parents would like to remove the stones of foolishness from their children's heads? My child is 30, and I'd like to remove all the stones of foolishness from their head. There are days I'm sure my parents would still like to operate on me and take all the stones of foolishness from my head. There's a possibility that the person holding the light is in training, that the person holding the light is the chief surgeon and he's training the lesser surgeon. There is a possibility of that. We don't know that. There is a possibility that the middle-aged man in this painting, the one doing the cutting, is modeled on Rembrandt's father, which could be kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing about Rembrandt's father thinking Rembrandt becoming an artist was folly, because Rembrandt's father was a man of business, a man of some wealth, but for his son to pick art as a means to support himself would probably have been seen as folly. Kind of like when our children tell us they want to sit on the street corner and play for tips. You know, we go, what? That's not going to pay the rent. The outcome from this touch is pain. If you cut my head open and dig around looking for stones, I'm going to be in pain for a while. I'm not going to like it. You see the grimace and the clenched hands in the patient? He knows it's going to hurt. There's no great lidocaine to numb the region. There's no ether mask to knock him out. Touch is causing pain. You ever been to the dentist? I hate to ask that question, but you ever been to the dentist? The dentist causes pain. Let's just all nod in agreement. We've never been to the dentist where it didn't hurt in some way. I hate the dentist. But when that assistant reaches out and puts their hand on your shoulder and says, "Are you doing okay, Miss Burns?" That hand on my shoulder does help. It really does. The human touch really helps. I was having a root canal that was one of those, there's a specialist for root canals. I mean, you go to the regular root canal doctor and the super duper root canal doctor, and then there's a fancy 10 syllable word that is the specialist for the root canal people that those two doctors can't handle. And one of my root canals, I had to go to that guy. And I talked him into letting Rachel sit in the room with us and hold my big toe so that I could be assured that somebody cared. And the touch of the big toe was what I needed to sit in that chair and endure it. Touch can hurt, and touch can soothe, all in the same operation. A lack of touch can be excruciating. Simeon didn't change Jesus' life, but he definitely impacted Mary and Joseph's. Mary and Joseph never forgot that. Who are we touching this Christmas? Figuratively and literally. Whose lives are we trying to change this Christmas? Through our touch, whether it's physically walking up and saying, "I'm so glad you're here, John," or whether we're touching somebody's life through providing them with something they need, touching them figuratively. A hug to a person we barely know can change their life. Sometimes a gentle touch from a stranger can make all the difference in the world. Again, my refrain, as you've heard it every week this Advent, is, are we so caught up in our own preparations and our own little world and our own little concern about what we're doing and how we're going to get it done and what's going to take place at my address or my mother's address or what's not taking place at my mother's address or who's not going to be at some address they should be, that we've missed the greater hurting world that we could theoretically and in all practice, touch. The Quaker church as a whole is struggling for its identity. I won't bore you with all the boards I see, but as a whole, the Quaker church is struggling for its identity. What would it be like if our identity became that we were touching the lives of others? What if we went to that elderly neighbor that might be alone, that might need cookies and a hug, or a trip to the doctor? Or what about that kid in your neighborhood who, when you see the kids playing basketball at the end of the street, they're not invited to play for whatever reason, and they might need a conversation and made to feel a little special, even though the rest of the kids don't let him play, kind of like Rudolph in the reindeer games. What would it look like if we touched the widows and the orphans? We, as a bell choir, performed at a funeral this week in which a 63-year-old woman suddenly became an orphan. We all face it at some point. When both of our parents are no longer here, we become orphans. Is there an orphan that needs an extra special touch this Christmas? What about the person beaten down by life that you've never met, but you know who I'm talking about because you see him in the grocery store, and it's obvious they've been beaten down by life? What would a touch mean? What would a hand on the shoulder and a I really hope you have a Merry Christmas mean to them. And yes, they're probably going to be brusque and say, oh, I'm fine. But what's it going to mean to them? The people we don't know. Or the kid that carries out your groceries, because I guarantee you don't have Daryl. Daryl carries out the groceries at my Kroger, and I don't think Daryl has ever frowned in his life. But if I go to my local HEB, I get Mr. Sullen Kid. Or what about that standoffish person in the next cubicle who always has a scowl and a frown? Maybe they just need a touch of your hand. You don't know what's going on in their life, and you don't need to know. But we can reach out and touch those around us. What about a bag of groceries for those who are hungry? How are we going to meet the needs of a hurting world? We can give something as free as a hug, as free as a touch of our hand, as free as just noticing that they exist. Or we can put some money behind it and help somebody who really needs something. I was going to save this for after church, because it has nothing to do with my sermon, but I feel a really strong leading to say it now. We know of a family who needs underwear and socks. It's that simple. No toys, just underwear, socks, and shampoo. We need four volunteers or four groups of volunteers to underwear and sock four kids. And if you can do that, see Marilyn after church. It's a tangible way we can meet a need and it won't break your bank. I mean, really. If you can put a PlayStation under the tree, you can buy socks for a needy family. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. If we do Christmas the same way every year, and I am the number one, gotta do it the same way. We're not having Christmas at my house this year. We're having it at Randy's, and I'm falling apart. Come on, I'm going to be with Randy. I'm going to be with Richie. I'm going to have my mom and my dad. What's the big deal? You know, come on, Robin. Get it together here, girl. But if we only ever do it the same way and we expect different results, it's never going to change. We got to get outside our comfort zones. We got to step out of what we normally do and do something different. If Christmas is always about what we put under our tree and what we do for our families and who's coming to our house, we're never going to meet the hurt of a hurting world. This Advent, let's do something different with our presence. That would be our presence, P-R-E-S-E-N-S-C-E, you know, our being presence. Let's do something different with our presence and our touch. Let's do something different with the words that come out of our mouth. Let's do something different with who we impact. And then let's do something different with our time and our money. Who will you touch today? It's not a one-shot deal, because you can turn around and touch somebody tomorrow. And the day after. By my calendar, there are 8 days to Christmas. You should be able to touch a lot of lives in 8 days. Do I have that count wrong? It's 8 days? Oh, good. I knew you would know. 8 days. How many people can we touch in the next 8 days? And then how many people can we touch in the next 365? Who will you touch today? Tomorrow, this week, this season, who will you touch? Let us pray.